Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's the My First Gig Podcast. Whoa. Sharing stories of first gigs and shows. Comedians sharing their memories. The fun and entertaining, exciting and crazy. With Dwayne Dugan as your host. It's the My First Gig Podcast. Here we go.
Well, guys. It's that time again. It's time for My First Gig with me, Dwayne Dugan. Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining once again. Thank you for joining for the first time, whoever you may be. I hope you're somewhere nice. Maybe a walk through a park. Maybe a nice long drive on your own. Or maybe you're listening to this in bed. And if you are, just know that if you fall asleep with me in your ears, and if you don't have that sleep timer that shuts off the podcast after 20 minutes, then tonight, we sleep together. That's a weird opening. Anyway, look, I'm Dwayne Dugan. Welcome to the podcast. Today's guest, as you can see, is Mary Beth Barone. A very fun guest, very fun comedian. We gigged together at the Paddy Power Comedy Festival here in Dublin earlier this summer, and we did the show, and then the next day recorded the podcast, which was nice. It's fun. These festivals are great for basically catching people to do podcasts. It's like, hey, I know your schedule. I got sent a schedule too. And then when you're on the show as well, it gives you a bit of credibility, because I'm like, I'm on this because I'm Irish. I'm not getting booked in their equivalent. There's no Paddy Power New York Comedy Festival that they're flying little Doogie Doog balls over to. But if there is, fly me anywhere. I will go anywhere if you pay for me to go. If you're a booker, if you run some mad show in a shack in Ecuador, I'll go. If you run a little wooden bar in a town 100 miles outside of Prague, but still calls itself Prague, even though there's no transport to Prague or any of the airports, I'll go. I take beer tokens. That's all I need. If you're watching on the video, welcome. If you're listening early, extra welcome. Because that means you give me money. Patreon.com/myfirstgigpod. If you're not listening early, you get this on a Monday morning. Like, who wants to wait to a Wednesday to get a podcast? If I'm going back to work and I'm doing the commute in the morning, I want my podcast on a Monday morning. And this should definitely be top of your list. You know, if it's a case of like you're getting 10 podcasts in and you're going to go, do you know what? Joe Rogan, you can wait. Doogie Doog Balls, it's the second time I'm calling myself that, has a podcast out. If you're watching on video, my curtains are back. If you haven't listened, update, I just bought a house. And that's pretty much why I'm asking you to subscribe to the Patreon. It's not actually to support the podcast. It's not actually so you can get benefits. It's so I can pay for this. I don't know how to pay for this. It's wild. And I'm like, it's a bit bittersweet. I've tried for so long to get this place. Me and my girlfriend, we've saved for years. We've lived apart, trying to save through a pandemic, not seeing each other for months. And now we're finally here. And everyone tells us, oh, this is the greatest, one of the greatest days of your life. Like, enjoy this. This is going to be one of the best things you ever do. And I'm like, yeah, fair enough. But like, it's very hard to get excited about this house when I know one day I'm going to lose it in a divorce, and I'm kind of preparing myself for that. It's like, let's not get too attached, whatever day down the line that is, you know, let's just get it over and done with now. But it's wild, can't afford a thing. It was exciting though, and my girlfriend was like so happy. She was like, right, let's go out to dinner to celebrate. There's this restaurant we've always wanted to go to. And I'm like, yeah, but like, would you not prefer a walk on the beach? You know, maybe you'd like a cycle through a nice park. Or if you want to have to go inside somewhere, let's go to like a posh shopping centre where they give out free samples. If you get where I'm going, I'm saying let's do something that costs a total of $3.99. All right? Because money is something that we're never going to have again. We're paying for this until, what's 35 years? Until I'm 69? Not nice. Like, I'm not entirely confident I'll be alive at 69. So maybe that's all right. But I don't want to die at 68. If I pay for this for the remainder of my life and then get a year free, because we've got that weird house insurance thing that if one of us dies, the house gets paid off. But and like that could happen tomorrow. And obviously neither of us want to die. But we're also like, I guess it wouldn't be the worst thing. It would be the worst thing, but it, good benefits, you know? But we go out to this restaurant anyway, and I'm like, all right. And I'm just like, will I just get a garlic bread? Can I get that as a main? And they're like, it's a side. It's very much a side, and it costs a euro. No, you can get it on the side of something else as a main. And my girlfriend, Fiona, she's reading the menu, and of course, she orders the most expensive thing. I know I sound like I'm being a little ratty boy, but I was just like, oh, why are you doing this? But I didn't want to ruin her day because, you know, I saw how excited she was and I want her to enjoy it and I don't want to be a downer. So I thought, you know what, if you can't beat them, join them. So then the waiter was like, and for the gentleman? And I was like, do you know what? I'll have what she's having. And he was like, two steaks coming right up. And I went, whoa, come back. Excuse me, sir, come back. No, when I said I'll have what she's having, I meant I'll have the steak you bring her. We're sharing here. We can't afford two meals, okay? I want one steak, I want two forks, and I want a fight on the bus home. Please, tip your waiter, because I can't afford to. But it is nice. Jokes aside, it is very good. It's very fun, and I'm very happy. It's very nice, and soon I'll have a little corner where I can record these and make it all pretty and stuff. But until then, you get the curtains. This is another one of the podcasts where I don't have video. There's not a lot of video. All of these episodes have been recorded before I started doing video, okay? So Joel Isaac had video, but these are all audio. But you can see me on YouTube if you want to look at me. I am beautiful. But it's nice. It's a fun interview. And yeah, I start off, we start discussing the show. I made a little faux pas. I made a little faux pas during the gig that we did the night before. Who was on our gig? It was Mary Beth Barone. Was it Shane, Daniel Byrne and Foy Lambs and Hogg? And me? No, Killian Sunderman. I'm just naming all of the cool dudes of comedy these days. If you want to see cool dudes of comedy, you should come to Cherry Comedy. We got all the cool dudes you need. Yeah. So it's fun. What did I want to tell you anything else? I don't think I did. Did you want to listen to anything else? No, I don't know. Guys, this podcast is powered by Acast. What does that mean? It means it's just bloody brilliant. You still get the podcast wherever you go. I've been telling people, oh, you get ad free. And then people tell me, oh, they don't get the ads on Spotify. It turns out if you have Spotify Premium, then Spotify, like 9 times out of 10, won't put the ads on. So don't listen on Spotify. I think I said this last week. Do I sound really greedy in these bits? Look, when I say for those who subscribe on Patreon, we know it's not bloody millions of people, all right? We know it wouldn't take me that long to count all of him, them. You decide which one's true. But we're having a great old time. I'm going to start, when is it? It's the 3rd of October. If you're listening to it on Patreon, it's the 5th of October if you're not. And I think on the 10th, on the 17th, the weekend of the week of the 17th, I'm going to start the bonus episodes. So I know that's taken a while, but I'm going to start doing those. So have a little gander for that. Stick around till after the episode. Listen to my ramble. I'll tell you who to listen to next week. But what about next week? What about this week? The guest is Mary Beth Brown. Sit back and relax. And remember, if you are in bed, this does count as sleeping together. If you could text me and tell me that's what you did, I would like to add you to. This is the point where I've just realised I'm not recording any video. Oh, I'm not doing all that again. We're 9 minutes 40 in. Alright, if you're watching on video and you're wondering why there isn't, now we're on video. Did I really do that? Oh god, what an amateur show. Yeah, subscribe to me on Patreon. It's actually pretty shoddy, okay? Oh god. If you listen to this on audio, you're better off. You're getting the best me on audio. I don't deserve to be watched on video. What a shambles of a man I am. But not what a shambles of a guest or an episode I have. And it's time for you to listen. So, as I said already, but as I say again, and I mean it with so much more passion this time, sit back, relax, enjoy yourself, get comfy, have a loved one nearby, pop in your earphones, and listen to my first gig with Mary Beth Burrow. We did a show last night.
Yes.
Your first show on Irish soil?
Yes, it was.
How'd you find it?
I thought it was lovely.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's so nice. This festival is so well organized and like well set up. It's very, it's just good vibes here.
There's nothing like it, is there?
Yeah.
It's like music festival style, but.
But like even more put, like buttoned up, I would say. Because the tents are so like pristine and they have walls. The tents have walls. So it's a really nice atmosphere. And I find that in rooms like that, you can really hear the laughs because of the acoustics.
Now, I don't mean to call myself out, but I was hosting a show last night.
Yes.
Did you notice I fluffed your name?
Yes, but that's okay. It's been fluffed before.
Luckily, though, I always say everyone's name twice.
Yeah.
I do a pre-clap and then an actual one.
I wasn't worried at all.
And then thankfully, I was able to correct it.
No, I have been called many names and it's okay.
I called you Ramon.
Okay, I thought it was Marone. So that's maybe actually different than what I thought. But
I thought Ramon and I was like, oh. That could be cool.
Yeah. I mean, hey, I will come on stage regardless. So that's one great thing about me.
You were on stage with a stool last night, but you were injured. Would you?
Yeah.
Did that impact you a lot? Would you usually be quite physical?
No, I stand almost completely still in my sets. I have sat down. I want to transition to being a seated comedian, but I think it's a big jump. And you really need to back yourself to just be like such a captivating speaker that you feel you can just completely sit. So I've dabbled in it. I think I broke my toe and or my metatarsal. So I just wanted the stool on stage in case it started to like throb while I was up there. But I ended up not even eating it. I just had my set list on the stool and I didn't need to sit on it. So I felt like, you know, it was there if I needed it. But I got through the set.
Happy days.
Great. Yeah.
And so you're here, you're in, when I say here, I mean like Europe. So you're off to Edinburgh next.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been at the Fringe before?
I've never been to the Fringe. I'm so excited. I will be there from the 3rd to the 28th doing my show.
Yeah.
I have one night off in there, but basically every night. And I'm doing my hour every night. And then I have my show, Drag His Ass, a Fuckboy Treatment Program, that I'll be doing late night, two of the nights that I'm there.
So what's that? Is that stand-up as well? Or is that a...
It's mixed media. It's stand-up. And then it's a mixed bill show. And then usually at the end of Drag His Ass, I bring on a fuckboy that I've pre-interviewed. And I do a fuckboy redemption, which is where we like talk about their wrongdoings and try to set them on a path of righteousness. But since I will be so busy with my hour, I'm actually going to have... people in the beginning, I'm going to tell the audience, if you have a crazy dating story, think about it. And I want to bring up maybe two or three people and we'll talk about their crazy dating story and, you know, what happened and if they're still in touch with the person and hopefully provide some catharsis.
Well, I think, yeah, that's perfect for late night at the Fringe, I think. Although this will go out afterwards. So look, I heard it went fantastic.
Oh, well, amazing. Yeah. We'll kind of just sort of prep for best case scenario.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the plan after the Fringe then? That's fairly intense. Like, you know, it's like one day off, two shows a day.
I only have one show a day.
But the night show, no?
The night show will be, I'm only doing it twice.
Oh,
so
sorry.
That's good. But I was thinking
that was a lot to take on if you're doing it every day.
Yeah, no, that would be crazy. I'm going to go back to the US for probably a month and, you know, get settled back in New York, maybe do a trip to LA and then I have a couple other projects I'm working on that I think I'll have to put on the back burner for Edinburgh. So I will be starting those back up.
Diving back in. Very good. Well, before we chat about your first gig, if I said to you, what's your first memory of comedy?
Mm-hmm.
And that can be comedy in any sense. What do you think of?
My first memory in comedy. My family is a very comedy-focused family.
Okay,
we
good.
Are very funny people. Both my parents are funny in different ways. And so we were, you know, very into watching family comedies and maybe some comedies that were not as appropriate for kids, but they would fast forward through the bad parts so we could all enjoy them together. And I think, we always had a taste for comedy. And yeah. I think my first memory of sort of independently deciding I thought something was funny was when we have a program in the States on Nickelodeon called Nick at Night, which is late at night. They play reruns of old sitcoms. And I don't even know if it's a thing anymore, but they used to play reruns of I Love Lucy, which is a black and white sitcom from, I guess, like the 50s.
Yeah.
And it was about this couple, Lucy and Desi. And it was just Lucille Ball was. Yeah, exactly. So she was the heroine, the protagonist, and she just was like so captivating, and her physical comedy was amazing. And even as a kid, I just found it so entertaining. So I would stay up late as much as I could to watch her do her thing. And I have many, many VHS tapes of old episodes. And yeah, I really just fell in love with the whole show.
Have you held on to your VHS player and all?
I don't still have the player, but I've kept the VHS tapes. I'm just like not ready to get rid of them.
I'm the same. I've an attic full of tapes and yeah. I have no way to use them.
I know. I mean, I think there's external VHS players out there. I don't have one, but
certainly now with like vinyl even now in music is uncool. It's back at cassettes now.
Right.
So VHS is making a comeback. It has
to. I pray.
Like as shit quality as it is, it's going to come back with the
There's something
the
fun wholesome about it.
Yeah, some of the films I used to watch like as a kid. If I watch them now, you know, in the widescreen and the 4K and all that, if it doesn't have that wavy bar down the bottom, I expect it.
You should have to put work in to rewind something because that shows that you really want to watch it.
Well, my VHS growing up didn't rewind. It was broken. I had a secondhand one. The only way to get it to rewind was to let it play till the very end.
And then it would automatically. But like, wow.
Oh, it was a nightmare. But yeah, so that's your, I Love Lucy is your first memory of comedy or your first kind of what you think of when you think of comedy. Humor is a thing. In what you kind of consume growing up at a young age. When do you think you became aware of like stand-up comedy?
My dad had stand-up records. I remember Steve Martin specifically was one that we listened to. And I always was aware of it as a medium. And there were definitely some stand-up specials that we enjoyed as a family. And then I didn't attend a stand-up show until I was, I guess, in my 20s. I mean, I consumed a lot of stand-up like on Comedy Central and HBO, but I went to the Comedy Cellar. That was my first comedy show I attended in person, probably in my early 20s. And I just remember being like so obsessed and we would go all the time. And then off of that, I signed up for improv at UCB because I just thought it would be fun to do. And then from there, I really fell in love with stand-up after I did my first gig.
There we go.
And look at that segue.
Well, we won't go there just yet. Let's stick with some of those early things. So Steve Martin Records. Any other names that you remember?
Kevin James had a stand-up special on Comedy Central, Don't Sweat the Small Stuff. And it was just so funny. Like, we watched it a lot of times in my house. So that was one. I think Paula Poundstone was definitely a regular. And I'm trying to think of some other comics that we would watch, just like their hour-long specials as a family. I can't. There's a few that I won't name anymore due to maybe how the environment has shifted.
Of course.
But they were still integral in my introduction to comedy. Yeah. Jim Gaffigan as well.
Oh,
big in my family.
I guess, yeah, I always ask that question because I'm like, it's so different for American comics because it's like stand-up, it's on like Paramount Comedy or Comedy Central or like if you wanted to watch a comedy special here, you know, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, if you didn't go to the store and buy it, you weren't going to see it.
You couldn't see it, yeah.
And like they definitely were popular, but just niche. So it wasn't something that like was on TV, I'm going to say, until, I don't know, mid-noughties or something mm-hmm. like that. At least not in my mind. Maybe it was. I just wasn't aware. So
you're a fan of comedy from a young age. You listen to these records, watch these specials, but you say you don't see comedy live until your 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Was it just that you didn't know that you could just go and see a show, or was it just it didn't come about?
Yeah, I guess I just didn't really have a concept of the culture. Yeah. Like, I knew that there were stand-up shows, and I knew people who had been to them, but I didn't realize that there were shows like every single night at these amazing venues in New York, and you would see up-and-comers, you'd see established people, and at the Cellar, there's always sort of that element where maybe someone might drop in. But I think there was, yeah, it was sort of this weird thing. Once I was aware of it, I was just like obsessed with it.
Yeah. I noticed that, yeah, because I'm certainly aware of comedy here. I used to, when I visited Dublin, I didn't grow up in Dublin, but when I visited Dublin, I'd go to comedy clubs. When I moved to Dublin, I didn't until I started.
Yeah.
I always find that very strange, that like I knew it was there, but just, yeah, never went for it. Some of those first times going to the Cellar and stuff, do you remember what any of the names you would have seen back then?
Yes, I remember Lisa Traeger was there. Matteo Lane was there. I saw, who are other people that I saw there? I think Amy Schumer dropped in one of the times, Jon Stewart. So it was really a range of people that I didn't know, but then would, you know, become fans of, and then ultimately meet some of them and become friends. Jared Fried hosted a lot when I went. I'm trying to think of other, Andrew Schultz, definitely, Mark Norman, Joe List, Gary Goldman. So yeah, it was quite, you know, quite an introduction, and they would do their 15 or 20 minutes. And then I just remember I would like be keeling over laughing. And I was just so impressed and blown away.
Yeah, a lot of those names have been here over the years at this festival. It's yeah, it's always fun seeing
Greer
who comes
Barnes
over.
Was great. Will Sylvince. Like, there were these regulars who would sort of close out the show every time. And I just, like, no matter how many times I heard their set, I was just, like, pissing myself.
So how long were you going to comedy before you thought, hey, I want to do something? Or did you need to sign up to improv before you thought about that transition?
Probably was going to shows at the Cellar for maybe like a year interspersed, like not super frequently, but it was always just a good option, like for a date night with my then boyfriend. And then I signed up for improv with no real expectation of what it would become for me, but I just thought it would be sort of fun to do. I always felt very performative as a child, and, you know, I wanted to be an actress for a while. So I thought, you know what, maybe improv would be fun. And then it just became this thing that I was like, you know, it was the highlight of my week every week. And then I took the plunge, did an open mic, and decided. I was also watching a lot of comedy at that time. Amy Schumer's show was exploding, and she had an amazing special on HBO. I was getting really into like Andy Kindler and Michelle Wolf. And so it was really like, I think it was at the beginning of this phase that we're in now, which is like comedy just became like something cool. Like, it was like, oh, and that's not why I pursued it. Obviously, starting with improv, which is inherently uncool. I wasn't like, I want to do a cool job. I was just like, oh, I'm going to take improv, see what happens. And then I knew pretty soon into doing it that I was like, how can I make this a career? That was my focus for a while.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I was going to ask you if you were at all performative as a child. You wanted to be an actress, you said. What like going through school and anything like that? Like any performance based things?
Yeah, I took voice lessons when I was in fifth grade, and I thought I could be like, you know, a pop star, Disney kid, actress, multi-hyphenate. And then I did go to modeling school, which was very interesting. I don't know how much I really learned at modeling school, but it was a good experience for me. And then I took like drama 101 in high school, but the drama program at our school, I just like, I didn't feel very drawn to it. So, you know, there were things that I felt, I just didn't know like how to break into the industry being from Connecticut. You know, I wasn't like an LA kid or anything like that. So, you know, I wrote songs and I would sing songs with my friend. And I think we tried to sort of have a grassroots effort, but it never really took off. So
all these avenues, you know, you want to do some sort of performance. And is that what led to going right? Improv is potentially that?
I was just like, I think it's a good outlet. It's a hobby I could do.
How were you aware of like to sign up or anything like?
Broad City was on TV at the time. Okay. And it was so funny. And I had read that those gals, Abby and Alana, had taken improv at the Upright Citizens Brigade, which is now closed in New York. But it's an improv theater and a school. So you can take classes there. So I just thought, you know what? I'll sign up. I'll see if I like it. And definitely never expected to take a turn in my life as a result. But, you know, when I was in college, I signed up for drama 101 and the class was full. And the teacher told me to come and sit in the class on the first day and come back the second day if there were any spots I could take the class. You know, I think that was sort of me being like, hey, I haven't really revisited this in a while. I'm 18. I'm at college. Maybe this is would be a fun thing for me to do. And when I got there for the second day of class, I opened the door and she goes, class is full. And so I left kind of with my head hanging, and I was so sad. And then I was like, you know what? Okay, I guess I won't be a performer, even sort of recreationally. And that put me off it for a bit as well.
What were you doing in college?
I was studying to be an English teacher, but I actually dropped out of college after 2 years to move to New York and get a job.
So yeah, so English teacher, definitely a big left turn from that.
Yes,
yeah.
Definitely.
Do you have any... Did that aspiration leave you to be a teacher, or was that just the avenue at the time? Or
absolutely not. No, I didn't finish college, so they literally would not allow me to. But also, I think, you know, teaching is a very specific skill, and I don't have that in me. So I would love to play a teacher on TV, perhaps, but I don't. It's not the lifestyle for me personally.
And the improv class now. So tell me about that. Like, when you sign up, is that a Is it evenings? Is it part-time? What does that look like?
It was once a week for 3 hours. And it was, I think it was a six-week program. And then you do a graduation show. And I just remember I was so excited to be meeting people from all over the country, all over the world, with totally different experiences from mine, and just like make comedy with them. And some people, you know, worked in finance. Some people were teachers. Some people were students. And it was like, you could come together and just like everybody was on the same page. Everybody was on the same level in the room because you're all in Improv 101. And I think it was just like really eye-opening for me to be exposed to so many people with the same interest from so many different walks of life. And I found that I was just like enjoying it so much. So that was a really great introduction to, you know, the comedy world.
And that graduation gig then, I say, like, did that feel like you were being like thrown in the deep end then, or were you waiting for that, like for that chance?
I felt like it was just sort of fun and exciting. I didn't have any expectations about it. And I didn't really, it was during Improv 201 that I sort of said, I'm going to do this open mic. We'll see what happens. And then, you know, I got bit by the bug, so to speak, because I just became addicted.
So where did you hear about this open mic then? Where was that?
It was at UCB.
Okay.
So that was really nice.
So it's all kind of
UCB schedule was all online, and you could do, they had open mics, they had improv jams, and then they had a lot of, you know, produced comedy shows as well, improv, stand-up, sketch. So that was a really great place to feel like it was a safe space.
God, yeah, I'd love something like that here. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I hate that it's gone. Mm. I think it was a tough business model, and it was not a perfect institution by any means. There were a lot of problems with it on a fundamental level, but I do feel that there has not been anything since then that has like had the presence that UCB had.
And I said, just being able to give like so many different people a platform and in different ways, and the way that you say you went in for improv, but they had this open mic. So the open mic, is that like, when you say like it's part of that as well, is it like under the same umbrella, or is it that when you go from doing improv to signing up for this open mic, does the community that you're in the improv with, are they aware of this now, or is it kind of, are they separated?
Basically, how it was structured was there was a training center and there were two theaters. So there was a theater in the East Village and a theater in Chelsea, and the theater in the East Village had more stand-up. So it was like, you could look at the schedule, see when the improv jams were, when the house teams were performing, all that stuff. And then it would also say when the open mics were. So you would go to the open mic, put your name on a sheet of paper in a bucket, and then you would sit in the audience and wait for your name to be called. And so the sets were 2 minutes each. So you had 120 seconds up there. And this one happened to be an all women's open mic. So it was hosted by Anna Dresden and Sue Smith, and they were just so lovely and welcoming. And it was a really great environment to do something for the first time.
Yeah, that sounds scary. Just like, you know, while you might know yourself, hey, I'm going to go, I'm going to sign up, I want to do this. The fact that you don't sign up until you're there and then sit in the audience waiting.
Yeah.
That kind of terrifies me a little bit now, even just saying it.
It is an insane thing to do. I will definitely agree to that. And I didn't tell anyone I was doing it. I told my brother, but I didn't tell anyone else. And I just thought, you know what? If I bomb, I'll never do it again. I just want to try it. And I mean, there were days that I went after that where not everybody got called. Yeah. Like, we would run out of time. So I look back on that instance and I feel very lucky that I was, you know, delusional enough to sit in that seat until I was called, and I got up there and did my thing, and it was a pretty wild rush.
Yeah, imagine you weren't called that first time and you just have to go home.
I know, and then come back a month later, because God. All women's one, I think, was only once a month.
Right. And so, like, 2 minutes is not a long time. So, like, how do you, like, because, like, I think everyone's guilty of, like, say you have a 5 minute set opener, 7 minute, whatever it is. You write what you think is that, but it's so much more, and you don't know how to control your time or anything like that. So how do you write for 2 minutes having never written a stand-up set before?
I truly just, like, had jokes written in a notebook, and I was like, I'll just read as many as I can in 2 minutes.
Right, yeah.
So I'm sure I spoke a mile a minute, and I was, like, you know, rushing, and I had no calmness on stage whatsoever. So I just remember a few of the jokes I did. They were very blue, because I think a lot of, you know, new comics do that stuff. And I still am very pretty blue now. But back then it was probably just a little more crass than.
I did enjoy last night. I had to acknowledge it in the crowd. There was, like, some older people, and certainly known the Irish people. I think I repeated the phrase. I can't remember the context that it was in, but it was pussy and butthole.
Yeah.
And then I remember going, because did everyone expect to hear that? I literally just locked eyes. She was on the left-hand side, this old woman, who she, like, just put her head down and just started shaking. And was like, no, she didn't expect to hear it.
Not expecting it.
Again, then later. Yeah. So that strategy of just reading until you're done.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I guess, yeah, because that's why I asked about, like, how do you write for 2 minutes? Because, like, if you have a start and an end, but you don't get to the end. Or
yeah, there was no strategy, really.
That was a safe way to go about it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when I don't even remember if they lit people, because that would, you know, if you light after a minute and you have a minute left, but I probably did, you know, maybe a few less seconds just to not go over, because I didn't want to make a bad impression.
And were these stuff that you'd been writing since you'd started the improv course, or was this something you wrote purely with performing at this open mic in mind?
I had been writing down some ideas for probably a month leading up to it. And then I figured, you know, an all women audience, maybe these jokes will be funny to them.
Yeah.
And I felt really good about it. Then the second open mic I did was in a basement of a comedy club, and I was the only girl. So my material did not go over as well in that environment. But I think, you know, nowadays it's great because there's a lot more queer open mics, LGBTQ friendly, female and female identifying only. And I think that that is really great for newer comics to have those places to feel comfortable, because that's been much more expansive than it was when I started.
Oh, yeah. It's something I never thought about until, like, I was deep into it. But it's like, yeah, I couldn't imagine, like, how intimidating it is generally. But, like, I've never had to deal with the fact that, like, I'm going into a dark basement and it's just 20 lads. And if, you know, if they're new, they're talking about all these things, and that's a different vibe and environment, right. You know. So it's, certainly that you had the chance for that open mic to get your foot in the door. Because, like, yeah, who knows what, if it went some other way. Do you remember anything about, like, the day before, as you're prepping for it, as you know that it's coming up and the clock is ticking down? How you're feeding?
I was insanely nervous. I think I could have jumped out of my skin. But I knew that I needed to do it for myself to just see, you know, I just, something possessed me. As I equate it to sort of like when I dropped out of college, like looking back, I can't really remember exactly what I was feeling when I decided to do that, but I just needed to take that risk. And it was the same with doing my first open mic. I was just like, I am a really self-motivated person. So I just said I was going to do it. And then I was like, I'm doing it.
And I guess like, it must be such a different feeling from the improv. So it's good that you have that kind of like, just let's go do it.
Yeah.
Because like, you know, obviously you've got a lot of rules in improv, or guidance at least. And while it's very reactionary, and you can have a couple of things in your back pocket in case, but you're not going up there going, right, here's something I prepared.
Right. And there's also, you know, seven other people on stage with you.
Yeah.
As opposed to stand up where, you know, just me, myself and I.
And how did you find that being on your own and like, here's stuff, like you're openly telling people, here, I've made this at home, here it is now.
Right. I definitely appreciated the magic of improv and how you can really find things that you're not expecting. But ultimately, I am a little bit type A. I'm a bit of a planner. So I felt there was comfort in just sort of going up there knowing what I was going to say. Even though if you know, fail or fly or whatever, it's all on you as opposed to a group. I feel like I have control issues. So I was like, this is great. I can just go on and I'm responsible for it. And if it goes well, it's all for me. And if it goes bad, then yeah, that's all for me as well. But I felt it was a worthy risk to take.
Maybe with a security in there almost, yeah.
Yeah.
Having improv, like at least going forward with gigs, having the improv background kind of help, like that you can maybe, I don't know if there's a heckler or something happens in a room that you can react, or would you say that you kind of left, I don't know, improv skills behind?
I think now it's helpful. I was really like married to my set for the first few years I did stand up. I would, you know, plan out every single word in the order of everything, and I didn't really have room to diverge from that.
Okay, yeah.
I think now I am a lot more comfortable with, you know, I know what my set is. So if I have to take a pivot because someone says something, or I ask a question and I don't get the answer that I thought I would, I feel a lot more comfortable, you know, riffing on things like that. But I think just being on stage in general is something you have to get comfortable with. And so improv definitely helped me with that.
Yeah. Do you remember any of the jokes from that opening night, or at least those early days?
I definitely told a joke about planning to stay a virgin until I was married, because I grew up Catholic, and so I had some sort of joke about abstinence only education. And then I think I joked about, you know, I don't even remember, something about, yeah, I just remember that was one of the concepts. And then I have a bit about circumcision, and I think I did like a kernel of that at the time. So I don't remember exactly what the words were, but that bit became something that became part of my set that I, you know, will still do to this day. So,
oh, wow. Very, yeah. Good. Yeah. God, yeah. I toyed with the idea of doing this as a live show. It was going to be at the Fringe, actually. And it was doing this as a live show and then getting them to perform some of their early gig.
I have my notebook still. I know that.
That's very cool to have. But like, that's, I get two reactions. Either people who can't remember go, there's not a fucking chance.
I think it's fun to reflect on who we once were.
Oh, of course. But I guess saying them in your current skin is a very different thing.
Yeah, I think there's definitely some jokes I did early in my career that I would not still do and don't still do. But
and after that first gig now, so happy with how it went?
Thrilled. I mean, it went so well, and I was like, oh shit, I want to do this for my job.
And did you just start, like, I know you were saying like those gigs were a month in between, but then the next,
yeah, week, but there were so many open mics in New York.
Did
so
you just get stuck in?
Yeah, I was every night I could, I would either go see a show or do an open mic, sometimes both.
Okay.
And then I continued taking improv classes at UCB, and I started doing bringer shows, which is, I don't know if you guys have those here.
We don't, thank God. Okay, I moved to London for a year, and my first gig was a bringer. I didn't realize.
Yeah, it's they're a dreadful. tough thing. I mean, basically, it was, you know, you'd have 15 comedians on the lineup, and anyone could do a set as long as they brought, I mean, it was pre-booked, but like, if you brought 8 people, you could do a set. So you would have a lot of people there, which was great. But I think it's a tough thing to do consistently for a long time. So, you know, you invite work friends, you invite home friends, you invite college friends, you invite your family, sort of all to these different shows, just so you can get reps in, as they say, and hopefully eventually get a tape, which was something that was nice to come out of the Bringer shows. You would get a tape from some of them. And then I used those to send to producers. And I was so brazen. Like, I would just, like, I would message anyone that I knew who produced a show with my tape and be like, I would love to do a set. Like, please let me know. Here's an example of my material. And I was just so fearless at the beginning. Now I, like, look back and I can't believe I did that. But it was so important to have that level of, like, delusion to be like, I can get booked. Like, I've been doing stand-up for 4 months and I can get booked.
Well, no, I wasn't going to say that you were delusional. I was going to say I did something similar, but I think it was delusion rather than kind of confidence. I was like, it was the morning after my first gig. We'd filmed it ourselves. It was a 13-minute set because we didn't time it.
Oh, my God.
And then I sent it to the biggest club in the country here. It was like, hey, can I do your show? And they're like, they were very nice about it. And I was just like, I wouldn't have looked at that message. Like,
no. I mean, a lot of people just didn't respond, which is fine. But some people did. And I think that was important for me to be putting myself out there.
And how long do you think you were doing it before you started to get, as you say, you more comfortable and kind of stuff like that?
I did a show at Gotham Comedy Club that was a Bringer show, but it was like a competition show. And I think it was my fifth show that I'd ever done, like, of a show, not including open mics. And I won. And I was like, okay, this is going well. Like, I think I can really double down. And that's when I decided to quit my job and break up with my boyfriend and move out of our apartment.
5 gigs in?
Yeah.
Fuck it.
Yeah. It's, you know, 25-year-olds. They're liable to do anything.
Fair play. Fair play. Wow. That's a... Well, look here. That's what you got to do.
And here we are.
There you go. It sounds mental saying it, but here, of course, it worked.
Yeah.
So with that kind of get up and go attitude from that very early time, if you could, you today, go grab yourself before your name gets called, you go up for your first 2 minutes and just take yourself aside for a minute, what do you think you'd say now? No butterfly effect, things in effect. Now you can,
right, you're just sort of imparting something. I would probably say, like, things are really about to change for you, and just don't hesitate, you know, just dive in. In fact, I wish that I, you know, decided earlier to do this, but I think if I could tell myself right before I was going up, just like, yeah, this is going to be a really pivotal moment in your life. So just, like, enjoy every second of it.
And maybe you don't even need to wait for your fifth gig. Just quit your
just
job
now. Just quit
now.
Just do it now. Do well, everything you can.
Look, if anyone's listening, quit your job. That's the way to do it. And don't make any complaints.
And don't give up. Yeah.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for chatting.
Thanks
your first gig.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. There we go. That's another episode in the books. Did you enjoy that? I bloody loved it. Do you know what I do? And this, I don't know, this might make me sound like a really, really cool guy. When I love an episode of a podcast, when it's fresh in my mind, I go and I leave a review. I go to Spotify, I go to Apple Podcasts, I go wherever. I leave a review and I say, that was fantastic. I had so much fun. I would recommend it to a friend. I would do it again. So if you had fun, leave a review. If you want to get them quicker, and if you want to get them more, if you want to get them extended, go to patreon.com/myfirstgig. Cherry Comedy in Dublin every single Monday night. Go to cherrycomedy.ie if you are in Ireland or visiting Ireland. If you're local, check out some stand-up comedy. You're going to see some names. Maybe you're going to see someone do a first gig, and in 10 years' time, you'll hear them on this and you go, oh, I was there. Actually, was anybody at any... If anyone's listening, that was at the first gig of a guest... That I would love to hear. I don't think... No, I haven't been, for sure. Everyone's been... No, I haven't done anybody too new. When we get to the Irish ones, there'll be somebody I'll eventually come across that I may have seen their first time. But wow, yeah, that would be interesting, wouldn't it? We'll get the DVD extras bonus audio commentary from drunk fan in the corner. I was like, well, I actually didn't think they were great, to be honest with you. And I'm like, well, I regret doing this. But that, look forward to that on Patreon sometime soon. Perhaps never. Next week, who we can have on a guest? I always should plan this. I know I'm doing it, and I don't know. Who do we have in the can that we're going to write next week? Okay, I got it. If you're a fan of stand-up clips on YouTube or on Instagram Reels, you've most certainly come across the Hot Water Comedy Club in Liverpool in England, and the resident MC and the powerhouse that has been touring the longest tours to the most sold out insane audiences is none other than Paul Smith. And Paul Smith will be next week's guest on My First Gig. So
tune in for that. Follow us on at My First Gig Pod, wherever you get your podcasts. No, that's the wrong one, isn't it? It's so many buzzwords. The buzzword's born. Should I be more me? I'd like to dedicate this episode to my friend's getting married in a couple of weeks, and his name is Someone. inside joke, guys. I don't just do the jokes outside, I do them inside as well. And yeah, so guys, we're going to have fun. We're going to be back next week with Paul Smith. If you enjoyed it, you can follow me at Dwayne Duke and follow the podcast at My First Gig Pod on whatever social media platform you want, and we'll all have a bloody belter of time. You know, if you had fun and just shared it to your stories and said, good podcast, give it a listen. I'll actually like start naming like my toes after you. I will. Can you name toes? I guess I'm in charge of that. I'll be like, right, pinky toe, up for grabs. First person to do it. Second person to do it gets the big toe. On what foot? The right foot. Which one's the right foot? Could be the left. Oh, wordplay. Wordplay? Yeah, when I'm doing toe-based wordplay, I should go. Guys, thank you so much for listening. We'll see you another time. Just have a great time. Try your best and have fun and smile. I love you very much, and I bid you adieu. Goodbye. God bless. Au revoir. Adios. I've been Dwayne Dugan for My First Gig. We will see you another time. Thanks.
It's the My First Gig Podcast. Whoa.
You've been listening to My First Gig with Dwayne Dugan on Acast. Follow online at My First Gig Pod or at Dwayne Dugan. For classic episodes, ad-free, early access, and more, head to myfirstgigpod.com. This is My First Gig with Dwayne Dugan, powered by Acast. Enjoy.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.